Welcome to the Morning Magazine on KGNU Community Radio. It's July 21st of 2023. I'm your host, Jack Armstrong. Up first on today's show, the future of Boulder Municipal Airport is creating a lot of turbulence. We'll hear what the buzz is about. This week's .org looks at Colorado Dragon Boat Festival, taking place this weekend at Sloan's Lake. And then we'll get an update on local sports news from Jimmy Searfoss. We'll have a BBC News update at 8:30. Then it's time for Connections. Host Rosanna Longobetter will speak with Senior Officer for Policy Advocacy Communications from Pulse, from the Colorado Health Foundation. Then at 9:30, it's the Morning Sound Alternative with Ginger Perry. That's all still coming up, but first, the headlines with KGNU's Benita Lee.
A gunman charged in February for shooting at Boulder's Millennium Harvest House faces new charges related to a Lafayette homicide earlier that month. 45-year-old Antonio Lucero allegedly fled the scene of a February 7th shooting at Lafayette Gardens Mobile Home Park on South Boulder Road. Officers discovered his victim, a man outside of a mobile home, injured by a single gunshot wound. Lucero is already in custody in relation to a February 20th incident at Boulder's Millennial Harvest House on 28th Street. Police were responding to reports of an active shooter. Lucero was apprehended and charged with counts of felonies and two misdemeanors. Dozens of Coloradans waiting in jail for mental health evaluations will have a greater chance of accessing treatment sooner, thanks to almost 40 beds reopening at a Pueblo hospital. The Colorado Mental Health Hospital, which specializes in competency evaluations for people with pending criminal charges, was forced to close several beds in 2020 because of COVID outbreaks and staff shortages. A hiring campaign this year attracted more staff with pay raises, hiring bonuses, and other incentives. According to the Colorado Department of Human Services, over 450 Coloradans are waiting in jail for an inpatient hospital bed rather than receiving mental health treatment. They say the added beds will allow the hospital to serve about 117 more Coloradans per year. After months of investigation, detectives have determined that the March shooting deaths of two men in unincorporated Boulder County were a murder-suicide. According to a Boulder County Sheriff news release, 52-year-old Robert Reed, a landlord, shot and killed his tenant, 61-year-old Timothy Crimmins. On March 16th, deputies were dispatched to a property where both men lived in separate buildings in the 3900 block of Ridge Road after family members said they had not heard from Crimmins in several days. The deputies discovered Crimmins' body under a tarp outside the home. One of the deputies then returned to his patrol car for equipment and noticed a vehicle parked in the area that had not been there before they arrived. Upon closer inspection, the deputies found Reed dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Officials also found several newly purchased cleaning supplies in the car. Investigators believe Reed intended to dispose of Crimmins' body and hide evidence of the murder using the cleaning supplies. They also believe that when Reed saw their patrol car, he decided to take his own life. Dispatch records show that Reed and Crimmins made calls to authorities a total of 11 times since January 1st, following ongoing disputes over rent payments, potential eviction, and payments for work completed on the rental home. Officials say Reed appeared to have had no accomplices and to have acted alone. Denver is shutting down many of their park's public restrooms due to a recent rise in theft and vandalism. Grace Gabriel has more.
Denver Parks and Recreation reports that 13 of 30 plumbed restrooms are currently closed in response to vandalism or theft of plumbing and piping. To accommodate, the department has implemented ADA-compliant portable restrooms at many locations, which have also been vandalized. They've closed 10 in the past month alone. In the past few months, all of the copper tubing was stolen from the public bathroom at Ruby Hill Park. At Washington Park, the toilets were blown up four times over the span of 16 months. Denver Parks and Recreation has implemented limited hours of operation for restrooms in public parks, keeping them open from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Staffing shortages have kept them from extending these hours. For KGNU, I'm Grace Gabriel.
Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser announced a settlement Thursday over the use of deceptive marketing practices that promise student loan forgiveness. Kira Zizzo has more.
Cornerstone Doc Prep, LLC, a dissolved debt management servicer in Colorado, will pay full restitution to the 167 customers impacted, totaling over $128,000. The settlement prohibits Cornerstone and its director, Eric Caldwell, from engaging in debt management services in Colorado. The Denver District Court's approval is pending. Under Weiser's leadership, the Colorado Department of Law has secured over $190 million in refunds and debt cancellation for student loan borrowers. The Attorney General warns student loan borrowers to be cautious of debt relief scams, especially with the approaching federal student loan repayment resumption in October. For KGNU, I'm Kira Zizzo.
The Aurora History Museum is celebrating its cultural and culinary diversity with several food-related events starting today. KGNU's Zach Thompson has more.
This evening, the museum is hosting Chefs of Aurora, a speaker series of chefs from various ethnic restaurants in the Aurora area. Through July 31st, six chefs will conduct cooking demos featuring Ethiopian, Thai, Hawaiian, Korean, Venezuelan, and Southern restaurants. These events are free to attend, but require reservation. More information can be found on the Aurora History Museum's website. For KGNU, I'm Zach Thompson.
Mostly sunny today with a chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon throughout the Front Range. Highs near 83 and lows near 60. For KGNU, I'm Benita Lee.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Jack Armstrong. The future of the Boulder Municipal Airport is up in the air, with the city struggling to find a balance between protecting community members' health and appeasing government regulatory forces that have other interests in mind. KGNU's Report for America core member Jackie Sedley has been buzzing around Boulder to learn what all the hubbub is about.
The steady hum of airplane engines combines with the chirps of birds and the rustling of leaves in the wind to create the soundtrack of Boulder County. There are a handful of airports in the county, and all of them are non-commercial. That means it mostly serves student pilots and folks flying in their own personal aircraft. Sorry, I know it's getting a little loud. I'll try to speak up. Oh, wait, this is radio. I'll just turn down the airplane noises. Sorry. The Boulder Municipal Airport, in particular, is creating a lot of turbulence in the community lately. That's because its future, whether or not to expand, how to please both residents and federal regulators, and more, is up in the air. The airport, more commonly known as BDU, is situated right on the upper eastern edge of the city of Boulder. Office parks and the county jail dominate the nearby landscape, but there are also residential enclaves, including the Vista Village Mobile Home Park. Rachel Steele, a teacher who lives there, invited me over to get a lay of the land. During the few minutes it takes me to park my car, gather my gear, and walk to her front door, I count four planes taking off above me.
Hi. I'm looking for Rachel.
Steele's 7-year-old daughter, Winnie, opens the door, grabs her mom, and we sit down at the kitchen table all together. The airplanes are muted, but not undetectable from inside. But Steele seems used to it.
I don't, like, find myself regularly annoyed by it, but I definitely, you know, you experience them in the sky. And there are times when you're like, wow, they're coming in low, how's that going for them, you know? But I know that there's also a lot of students over there who are learning, and I mean, I feel like living on Broadway is louder than living. You know, like, I don't know, that's my experience at this point.
Steele says she knew what she was getting into when she moved next to an airport.
I grew up around airplanes. I'm not bothered by it, and I don't have the expectation.
She's not sure how worried she should be about the environmental impacts of the airport, but she feels reassured by the fact that she doesn't live directly under the flight path. She's happy that people can learn to fly here and appreciates the programs the airport offers for children like Winnie. But just because she tolerates the airport doesn't mean she wants more of it.
I don't think it needs to expand. I think a small local airport is enough. Mm-hmm. If they want something more up there, maybe somewhere else. Yeah.
An expansion is one of many scenarios under consideration by the city of Boulder right now. So far this year, the city has hosted 2 airport community conversations where they invite folks in to get a sense of the questions, comments, and concerns related to the airport as it stands now. The most recent one took place Tuesday, July 18th. Around 100 attendees gathered in a conference room with colorful poster boards and a couple rows of folding chairs. The vast majority of those in attendance were white and over the age of 65. The room also contained 4 displays, each describing a long-term scenario for what the future of the airport could be. They were created by the Community Working Group, a collective formed in 2019 to help provide input on the future of the airport. The group is 50% airport users and 50% community members. Project consultant Catherine Vonatovich gave a rundown to the crowd. Scenario 1 is to keep the airport as is, with small enhancements.
This is very similar to what exists today, and that's over on this station, and that is primarily what remains the same is pretty much everything, and it's really working on maintaining what we have.
While scenario 2 focuses more on airport improvement.
We're really just looking at enhanced aviation facilities and some redevelopment areas.
Then scenario 3 keeps the airport intact, but adds in some housing.
This includes enhanced aviation, and it also introduces limited housing and housing opportunity here. We don't know quite what that looks like yet.
And finally, scenario 4 is the most drastic, with a decommissioned airport and new housing developments.
The only thing that remains is a helicopter pad. Lots of things change here. We have new activity centers, housing, green space.
Scenarios 1 and 2 seem to appeal to the aviation folks mostly, like Judd, an aviation enthusiast who declined to give his last name. He's a staunch supporter of maintaining the airport.
People don't realize the service that they get from having an airport. And it is not a bunch of rich guys. We are mostly doing this because we love aviation, and we struggle to do it, to have an airplane.
He doesn't believe there is any reason the airport should be shut down. Throughout the conversations, 2 concerns in particular kept coming up. Noise pollution, and usage of leaded fuel. Through BDU's noise abatement, pilots are requested to avoid operations between 11 p.m. and 7 a.m. But these are just requests, and according to Sheila, who also did not want to give her last name, many pilots ignore them.
They're being violated every day, and multiple times a day. And the industry hits back of like, well, it's a voluntary noise abatement. So, well, okay, great. To use your own language, it is voluntary. So it means you're volunteering to violate the handshake that you have with the community to be here, because underneath that volunteer effort is the ultimate volunteer, which is the city and the community hosting an airport, because we, by default, are not required to have an airport here.
And these concerns are not limited to Boulder residents. Bree Lehman is part of the community working group that helped put together the 4 scenarios. Lehman lives over in Lafayette. She is not anti-airport or anti-aviation, but is certainly anti-lead.
This is not an issue that only concerns people who are under the flight paths. It is an issue that concerns pilots. It should concern them. It's not just the community that is being impacted by this. It's everybody.
Lehman hopes that Boulder can live up to its green reputation by taking the issue of leaded fuel seriously, especially since she doesn't think the Federal Aviation Administration, more commonly known as the FAA, will do anything about it.
In my opinion, the industry does not intend to stop selling leaded fuel, and they are tying the ability for airports to take matters into their own hands by withholding funding and other threats. So I think there's a opportunity and a narrow window for the city of Boulder and its citizens to make their priorities clear.
Unlike other municipalities, the city of Boulder owns the land and manages the airport. Each acre on the roughly 179-acre property is worth an estimated $2 million. The city can use the land however it wants, technically speaking. But the FAA is responsible for 90% of the airport's funding for capital projects like runway repairs, and they have their own agendas for the airport. Boulder's airport manager, John Kinney, says that if an airport independently decides to initiate things like noise regulations or fuel prohibitions, things can go south quickly from a financial perspective.
Noise is such a linchpin issue between the relationships of a community, and being voluntary makes it problematic. The FAA precludes municipalities from creating further restrictions, and it's tied to your eligibility for grants. So if you break those rules, you don't get grants, is the hook.
With so many community members holding so many varied opinions, it's hard to say what's in store for the Boulder Airport. For Rachel Steele over in Vista Village, she just hopes she can keep her house. She's never been able to afford to buy in Boulder until now, near the airport, where housing prices are lower.
The truth is, you know, when things become more valuable, or, you know, as far as when it's quieter and there's big open spaces to build big expensive homes, it becomes less likely that I'll be able to stay here.
The airport is not taking off for now, and there are no specific deadlines in place for when decisions must be made. For KGNU and Report for America, I'm Jackie Sedley.
If you have something to say about the issue of Boulder Airport, KGNU will host a call-in show on the issue next Wednesday, July 26th at 8:35 a.m.
Time now for .org, spotlighting the work of local nonprofits and co-ops.
This is Poor Judge and Kit for .org, and today I'm speaking with Sarah Moore, Executive Director of the Colorado Dragon Boat Festival, taking place this weekend. Sarah, can you explain to listeners who may not be familiar what a Dragon Boat Festival is?
Yes, so we are the Colorado Dragon Boat Festival. We are a 501c3 nonprofit that hosts the largest AANHPI celebration in the Rocky Mountain region, and that stands for Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander Communities. Here in Colorado, not only are we the largest celebration for our cultures, but we are also the largest dragon boat festival in the country. Even though we are a landlocked state, it's shocking, we are the largest. We are in a two-day event, which happens tomorrow, starting on Saturday at 10 a.m. until 7 p.m., Sunday 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. We have dragon boat racing across Sloan's Lake on our new boat. We have performances on three different stages with over 80 local performance organizations. We have a huge marketplace where you can buy all of your goodies. We have delicious food in our Taste of Asia food courts, and we have a Dragonland area for kids and education. We have live artists on site as well. We have it all, so you will not be bored. There is something for everyone.
Can you share what some of the cultures represented will be?
Definitely, yes. Colorado Dragon Boat Festival started back in 2001 as a way to bring all of the cultures that are under the huge umbrella of AANHPI, so Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander communities, all underneath that umbrella. There's about 50 different ethnicities and cultures, but we bring all of them together to help celebrate and just showcase the amazing contributions and accomplishments coming out of our community. So not only do we bring those communities together, we also bring the general public into our celebration as well to make sure that we are building those bridges of understanding and celebration.
Okay, you said that this Dragon Boat Festival is the biggest in the U.S. How did it get so big? We're in Colorado.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of crazy. But back in 2001, we started and we had over 16,000 people just in our first year. So a ton of people who have the thirst and desire to come out and support our Asian communities here in Colorado and to celebrate diversity and culture. So back in 2001, we were at about 16,000 individuals. And last year in 2022, we were at 170,000 over the two-day event. We are a free admissions event, so please make sure to come. We invite everybody to come join us. And I think this year we'll have just the same amount of people, if not more.
That is a whole lot of people. How is parking and transportation going to work?
So there is no parking on site at the festival. We have a free shuttle going to and from Auraria campus. For more information, you can check out our website on where the shuttle is coming from. And we encourage everybody to either take the shuttle, you can walk, you can bike, or you can ride share. You can RTD as well, but there is no parking on site. So please make sure to plan your trip accordingly.
How does the event bring local AANHPI community members together?
Yeah. So back in 2001, our three founders really dug deep to try and figure out a way to bring all of our communities together in celebration. What better way to bring people together than with some friendly athletic competition, eating delicious food, dancing and celebrating with our performances, and then just having an open space for us to come and celebrate our culture and our traditions in a safe and fun way.
How has the reception been from the community?
It has been great. Since 2001, we've had families coming to the event for both days. And now I have met children and grandchildren who have been coming to our event. So it's very much a tradition here in Colorado. It is the one time of the year where everybody from our community can come together, see each other, and see the depth and breadth that we have here in Colorado under that AANHPI community umbrella.
If there is anything else you want anyone to know about the festival, what would it be?
We are a small 501c3 nonprofit that hosts this event. Up until May of this year, I was the only paid employee. We now have two full-time staff, a handful of contractors, and everybody else is amazing volunteers. We have over 400 volunteers over the two-day weekend, and this is put on by the community for the community in celebration. So I just want to say thank you to everybody, past, present, and future, who is helping with Colorado Dragon Boat Festival and making it the staple in Colorado and in the U.S. That it is.
That was Sarah Moore, Executive Director of the Colorado Dragon Boat Festival.
You've been listening to .org, KGNU's weekly look at local nonprofits. For more .orgs or for more information on this episode, visit news.kgnu.org.
It's a rough time for sports in America right now. There is nothing on. I've been watching pickleball. Pickleball! Hello and welcome to Sports Talk with Jimmy. I am your host, Jimmy Searfoss, back again with the best sports news and stories on the best sports show on KGNU. We took a little break to cover some people tubing down to work last week, but we are here back in the studio because some history has taken place here in the state of Colorado. Eaton High School is now home to an MLB draft pick, and not just any MLB draft pick, a second round pick. With the 52nd overall pick in the MLB draft, the San Francisco Giants selected Walker Martin, who became the 10th highest draft pick in Colorado high school history. Let me put this in perspective for you. There are 20 rounds in the MLB draft. That is 314 picks, and to go in the second round is absolutely insane. Martin had previously committed to go play shortstop for the Arkansas Razorbacks, but will forego his scholarship and instead signed a $3 million contract to go play for the Giants. That is nearly double the projected amount the experts thought Martin would be offered at that point in the draft. It isn't exactly common for the people of Colorado to get drafted out of high school, and if they do, normally it's because they're a very good pitcher. Of the 10 players that were drafted higher than Martin in Colorado history, 6 of them were pitchers, one of which was the late great Roy Halladay, who was drafted 17th overall by the Blue Jays back in 1995. Colorado batters are typically shied away from because there is that altitude bias that leads scouts to believe that players perform better simply because they are playing in Colorado. Another reason Colorado gets looked at is simply because of the season length. If you think about states where athletes typically come from, your Californias, your Texas, your Floridas, these guys get to play the game all year round, giving scouts a great look at who they are and gives them the opportunity to have more practice to their game. Up in Colorado, you can't exactly do that because it's tough to play baseball when the field is covered in snow. Scouts will often take a player that is getting reps year-round over a person that is a shortened season around the year. So, for Martin to be drafted this high, it means that he must be really, really good at baseball. And that is very much the case. Standing at 6 feet 2 inches tall and weighing in at 188 pounds, the Eaton native had a batting average of .556 in his 3 years of varsity baseball. That means over half the time he stepped up to the plate, he got a hit. As a senior, he was batting .633, which is just a video game number. Stats like that made him the MLB's number 28 prospect in the draft. Now, with the MLB draft being a little bit different than any other sports leagues, players don't go straight into the big leagues off the bat. Players like Martin typically spend 3 to 5 years developing in the minor league programs before he'll get the call to the show. So while it might not be right this second, expect Martin to be playing amongst the stars in a few years. And that is just about all the time I got for you going on here today on KGNU. Make sure you tune in next week at this same time for another episode of Sports Talk with Jimmy. Have a good Friday.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Jack Armstrong. Thanks to Benita Lee, Kira Zizzo, Grace Gabriel, Shannon Young, Jackie Sedley, Poor Jai Junkie, and Jimmy Searfoss for their work on today's show. If you'd like to make a comment about something you heard on KGNU, you can leave us a voicemail at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Up next is Connections with Rosanna Longo-Better. That's on the other side of the BBC News headlines.